You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is starting technology company now. Our guest for today's show is John Rotkin. John is a successful entrepreneur who started a technology company, FlySWAT Inc., in 1998 during his MBA at University of Chicago, and sold it in 3 years to NBCI for $120 million. Subsequently, he was the Vice President of Product Development and Research at NBCI and was responsible for all aspects of product lifecycle. During his tenure at NBCI, he was accountable for 80% of company's annual revenue. John is a computer science graduate from MIT and is currently pursuing his dual degree, MBA and JD, from University of Chicago, and at the same time looking for his next entrepreneurial challenge. He recently led his team to second place at the New Venture Challenge Entrepreneurship Competition held at the University of Chicago. Good morning, John. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sanjog.
How's life treating you?
It's good. It's good. It's fun to be back in Chicago after a four-year absence.
All right. Okay, for technology entrepreneurs, your success is an inspiration. What all and who all do you attribute your success to?
You know, there are a lot of people who helped along the way. I had a great group of guys who founded the company with me, one of whom I went to college with at MIT, Leo Cheng, and another one I went to business school with, Ray Krause, from Chicago. More important, though, I managed to find a group of people who had previously started companies, largely from MIT and from other technology schools. And they had gone before us and gave us a lot of help in getting started and thinking about our idea and finding investment and so forth.
So you started your company during the internet boom. At that time, there are stories about investors putting in money wherever there was some involvement with the internet. Do you think you were at the right place and at the right time, and that is what gave you a jump start?
Yeah, I think there's no question that being at the right place at the right time is helpful. We were, you know, our valuation was higher. We were more successful than we would have been otherwise because of timing. But I don't think timing is the whole story, because there were a lot of people who were also at the right place at the right time who didn't get their companies off the ground or didn't exit successfully or so forth. So timing is certainly one ingredient, but I think idea and execution, luck, all of those things are also important.
That's great. So as I understand, FlySWAT was about creating hyperlinks to other pages on the web for keywords on a content page that was being displayed. Seems like a powerful concept. So what was the proposed ROI of this technology?
Yeah, let me talk about what FlySWAT did a little bit first, and then it'll be easier to talk about how people could generate ROI on it. After we got bought by NBC, we were reading QuickClick. There's a large television campaign around QuickClick. Some people may remember those. And the tag phrase was, see a word, click it, get more information. So FlySWAT enabled users from their home computers or wherever to click on any word on their screen and immediately go to relevant web pages about that. So if you're surfing about talk radio, for instance, and you click on talk radio, it could instantly link you to, you know, technology talk shows or whatever it is you like. It sort of took out the need to go to a search engine along the way. You would just find things you're interested in and then navigate straight to them instead of going the intermediate step to the search engine. So for ROI, because of the way the software worked, there were two groups that needed to see a return. The first was the users. They needed to see that the software would increase their web surfing efficiency, reduce their wasted time, things like that. And then for advertisers, they needed to see that participating with FlySwat, putting their sites in our database, would be at least as effective for them as listing themselves in paid search engines and things like that. So the way we could calculate that for the advertisers is track very accurately the amount of users we sent their direction. It ended up being actually more successful for most of the advertisers than the current pay-for-search model is.
Now, I have seen, I had been browsing internet, and of course everyone has been doing that. I was on Google the other day, and I don't know from where did this small applet, I don't know what exactly it was, but suddenly when I used to type something on the left-hand side, it would pop up, or like, you know, shift the whole screen towards the right. On the left, it would show a list of links that were related. So this seems like kind of a replica of what you created. Now, is that something that was your thing, or somebody tried to mimic what exactly FlySwat did?
There were a few things similar to us, and then a few people that tried to mimic us later. A lot of times the related links were based on the page that you were reading. So if you were reading a sports page, it would show you other sports pages. So if you're on ESPN, for instance, it might refer you to Sports Illustrated or other sites in the same genre. FlySwat took that a step further, and we could do that per word based on the context of the other surrounding words. So one of the companies that did just web page references was a company called Alexa, and that might be what you saw the other day. They were actually acquired by Amazon right around the same time we were acquired by NBCI.
So you're saying that when you say about the context around the word, what does that exactly mean? Because if you are also looking at the words on a content page, and then based on that word, the links are being shown on the left-hand side, how is that different from Alexa or the similar tools? Are they only talking about, okay, suppose I go to, say, Amazon, so then it does it start just looking at the URL and then based on that pick up the three or four or five links and show on the left?
Is that what? Yes. Okay. The page-based related sites would look at the URL and know that you're on Amazon, know that Amazon is a commerce site, and suggest other commerce sites to you.
Right.
What our software could do is look at the actual text of the page. So know not only that you're on Amazon, but reading about a specific technical book, and then we could take you to more information about that specific book, or even more sophisticated context-wise, if you're on a sports page reading about the Giants, our software could figure out whether you were reading about the San Francisco Giants in baseball or the New York Giants in football, and give you different options depending on which you were currently reading about. The page-specific ones were unable to do that. They knew it was sports, but that was all.
So this was context-sensitive in a way?
Yes, incredibly context-sensitive.
That's great. You worked on this product for over a year, as I understand, to refine it and remove the kinks in the product. Now, during this product's beta development phase, what was your approach to keeping balance between making the best technology product and eagerness to bring it to market? Because this dilemma is faced by almost every technology entrepreneur. How did you deal with it?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm not sure we balanced that entirely successfully. We had a very large engineering staff, most of them from MIT. There was some statistic in our company when we had 12 employees, we had 25 MIT degrees among us, or something like that. So our people were very focused on building sophisticated, interesting software, and it did take time for us to sort of get the train moving in the appropriate direction and get the product released. It was sort of a constant battle between, you know, engineering and the investors who wanted the product out. So there were a few things we were unwilling to compromise on. We wouldn't compromise on quality, so we didn't release the product until we were sure it was reasonably stable and bug-free and things like that. We wouldn't compromise on some of our long-term plans, which meant we had to have a lot of ways to see how people use the product so that we could improve it over time, which meant a lot of our data operations had to absolutely be finished before the product could be released. And I think those were the specific area where our investors especially would have encouraged us to just launch without any of the data behind us about how the product is being used. And that, we felt like, was a short-term plan, because if you launch the product and people use it and then stop, you obviously need to have some way of understanding why. So our data operations were uncompromising. A few other things, you know, we did throw out a lot of features so that we could release when we did. I think that was the biggest battle, is how many features go in versus how quickly do you release once we laid the foundation of specific things we couldn't eliminate.
Oh, I've seen there are some big software companies. I would not like to name them here. However, the approach that they've taken is that do not try to create the best software under the sun, because you never know how the consumer is going to react to it. So bring out something in the market which should have been ideally beta, but then they still bring it out and there are kinks, and, you know, it crashes multiple times, and, you know, they have the capability built in to send some feedback back to the software maker so that they can improve upon that. I'm sure that you have not taken that approach, and that's why maybe you had early success in the whole process. We need to take a quick break here. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today. Robin Dane, Beth Sims, and Leah Ward Lee. These women mean and know business. Tune in to You, Your Money, and the Workplace with Robin Dane.
NASDAQ just keeps on trucking.
Work Life Today with Beth Sims.
Each week we explore a different topic related to creating success in our lives.
And the Executive Toolbox with Leah Ward Lee.
The Medical 101, How to Keep the Entrepreneur Healthy.
Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Tune in to Positive Living on Tuesday nights at 4 p.m. Pacific Time with Patricia Raskin for the program that brings you practical solutions to help you live happy and successful lives. Each week on Voice America, Patricia Raskin interviews national experts, best-selling authors, and celebrities who are making a positive difference in the world. So tune in and call in to Positive Living on Tuesday nights at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America for the program that brings you practical and inspiring principles for living more authentic and passionate lives. For an autographed copy of Patricia's new book, Pathfinding, 7 Principles for Positive Living, log on to RaskinResources.com. Are you looking for new ways to motivate yourself and your coworkers in order to increase the success of your organization? If you answered yes, then you need to tune in to Leadership Answers with Art Geiser every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Art will interview guests with the insight, expertise, and ability to translate vision into reality. Learn how to motivate yourself and your team to achieve maximum results. Listen to Leadership Answers with Art Geiser every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is starting technology company now. Our guest for today's show is John Rotkin. John is a successful entrepreneur who started a technology company, FlySwat, Inc., in 1998 during his MBA at University of Chicago and sold it in 3 years to NBCI for $120 million. Subsequently, he was the Vice President of Product Development and Research at NBCI and was responsible for all aspects of product lifecycle. During his tenure at NBCI, he was accountable for 80% of company's annual revenue. John is a computer science graduate from MIT and is currently pursuing his dual degree, MBA and JD, from University of Chicago, and at the same time looking for his next entrepreneurial challenge. He led his team recently to second place on New Venture Challenge Entrepreneurship Competition held at the University of Chicago. Before the break, we just discussed about, John, where you had been able to remove the kinks in the software, although there was, you tried your level best to keep a balance between making the best technology product and having the curb the eagerness to bring it to market. So I'm sure you did a great job at that. And let's move on to the next question now. You sold FlySwat for $120 million. Now, that is a lot of money for an intelligent search engine. What was NBCI's plan to recover its investment by leveraging this technology? And since you worked with NBCI, did that actually happen?
All right, Sanjog. Well, the first part of that question is a little easier. NBCI was a large portal like Yahoo or Lycos or something like that. At the time, they were the seventh largest site on the web. And a problem with websites, a reason a lot of websites have toolbars like the Google toolbar and the Yahoo companion and so forth, is that once you leave the website, they just have to hope you come back. If you don't come back, the website is completely unable to sell services to you or send ads to you or anything like that. So while you're away, they have no reach and they just keep their fingers crossed and hope you come back. FlySwat was a piece of software that the user installed in his own browser, like the Google toolbar and the Yahoo companion, and allowed NBCI to, while the user was away from the NBCI website, encourage that user to come back. Because we placed hyperlinks on things, we could, wherever it was appropriate, link the user back to NBCI. We could link them to other websites, but have the NBCI logo on our bar so they remembered that you know, we were helping them navigate the web. Also that we could stay top of mind and they would eventually come back to the website. That's how NBCI expected to earn its return back. Did that actually happen? Unfortunately, no. NBCI was the internet venture of NBC, the television network. And after a few years, NBC was having some of its own problems and refocused itself just on television and did not follow through on most of the NBCI initiatives.
Now, when you say about NBC was able to use this technology to have people come to their portal and, of course, to make a sticky site. Now, is that something which would have given, I mean, yes, there is an intangible benefit about having a site where everybody is visiting, but does it directly impact the revenue that they would have generated? Were they looking for online advertising from other vendors? And if there was a lot of people who could be there, or if this technology allowed NBCI's name to be always there, even they visited the other sites, which was as a result of the links clicked on the NBCI site, is that what was considered to be the ROI?
Sure. The having a sticky site, having users stay for longer, is very important to advertisers. So that's one way you make money back. It also gives you an opportunity to sell them your own services, your own, you know, premium email that you pay for and so forth. So the longer they're on the site, the more opportunity you have to do that. So it was valuable for NBCI for those reasons. It was also valuable to advertisers. The current business model on the web these days is pay-for-performance search, where you go to a search engine, you type in a search term, and you see a lot of ads that have purchased those specific words that you searched for. That model is expanding so that other sites, I think Google and one of Yahoo's arms, Overture, both do it, where as you're on another site reading editorial content, they're looking for search terms within the editorial content and serving you the same search-based ads. And that's exactly what FlySwat did in 99, and that's why NBCI bought us, because they were able to sell to their advertisers not just search terms on NBCI, not just banners on NBCI, but also hyperlinks on other people's websites.
Oh, that's wonderful. While you were at NBCI, you worked on product development and research. NBCI being a non-technology company, how did you steer the subsequent product development, other related technology initiatives and investments towards positive ROI? It seems to me like this would have been an uphill battle, since that would have taken a lot of explaining and consensus building.
It was certainly an uphill battle. NBCI definitely had the genetic sequence of its television parent. So, a lot of people were much more interested in, you know, producing very exciting content and, you know, having mini TV shows and basically running it like a television network. And, you know, a big difference between NBC and NBCI is that NBC makes several billion dollars a year, and they can spend the money to do that. When you're kind of a startup internet arm, you don't have that luxury. So we had a lot of meetings. When I came in, I was tasked, because I had just been running a technology company, with integrating the technology of a variety of acquisitions that NBCI had done. And it's challenging because sort of the television network mindset is, use a little bit of everything, and all the shows can be different, and it's okay if you have different technology running each channel. At a website, that's not as effective. So it was challenging to convince people that we needed to standardize our systems and pick the best from each acquisition and apply it company-wide and so forth.
No, that's wonderful. The technology startup scenario has changed totally now. And now that you're looking for your next challenge while you're also completing your MBA and JD, how do you go about sifting through so many opportunities that are presented to you?
I look for a couple of things. The main one is I'm most interested in participating in a venture that has an opportunity to be enormous. There are lots of good startup companies, and these days they're probably most startup companies fall into this, where you know they could be exceptionally profitable for 10 people or a dozen people, and they could all make good livings. It would be a great company. It would sort of grow slowly, but it would last. And those are very interesting companies, and I love to see people do those. For my own preference, because of how the last one worked out, I'm interested in really working on ideas that have enormous potential, where because they have very high returns, they're also very risky, and most of them, probably none of them, will ever work out. But the opportunity to do something just amazing is really interesting to me.
I mean, so as per you, now since you have the dollars, people are, of course, approaching you left, right, and center about all these different opportunities. So you are not risk-averse at all, and what you're saying is that if there's a huge potential for a company to make it big, then that's a good candidate for you and or for other investors or other technology entrepreneurs, or rather serial technology entrepreneurs who would like to take on their next challenge.
Yes, I would separate the investing from the from the participating. For investing, I would say I am pretty risk averse, but for participating, I prefer to participate in the incredibly high risk, potentially very high return ventures. But for investing these days, I think the first type of startup I mentioned, where a dozen people can support a dozen people profitably, and I think those types of startups are getting most of the investment dollars these days.
Great. Now, for any technology product, there are always more than one development platforms, or maybe more than one architectures that are available, and that is primarily the case. And that's more in the case of software. For example, when we talk about anything that needs to be created in terms of, say, if this was the case for your technology company FlySwat, when you were trying to build this, you might have had multiple technologies that are available, and how did you decide for your startup which one to choose, and how should these other startups decide which one to choose?
Well, we used Linux as our development platform, and the main reason we chose Linux is because that's what people knew how to program. I think that matching your capabilities to your platform is probably the best way to go. Most of the platforms can do most things as long as you don't use it. I think that's worthwhile.
We will take another break, but we'll be right back after these messages, so please stay tuned.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Get your week started off right with The Changing World of Work on Voice America. Heard every Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, The Changing World of Work is an educational and informative program aimed at everyone in the work world. Rich DiGiorgio is a thought leader who will focus on today's business issues and tomorrow's trends. So no matter what your job is, find out how to make today's work world work for you. The Changing World of Work with Rich DiGiorgio, every Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com, the Internet leader in talk radio.
We'll be right back. If you own your own business and are concerned with safety issues, then you need to tune in to Safety and Compliance, What You Need to Know, with your host, Michael Hughes. On the show, Michael will discuss real-world examples and solutions in achieving safety, compliance, and true cost reduction. That's Safety and Compliance, What You Need to Know, Mondays at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio from a business perspective.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Dare to be a leader is not just a show title, it's a way of life. With your host, Dr. Valenti, you will learn how to apply leadership skills to your everyday life. Dr. Valenti will discuss topics from overcoming fear to building confidence. That's Dare to be a Leader, Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
How do you know when you've got the secret sauce that combines the right ideas and technology? What does it take to get that product built and launched? What type of sales force does your company really need? And what should the people who represent your company have in their toolbox? Join Lee Award Lee and her guests on her show, The Executive Toolbox, every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, as they answer these questions and others, while giving you insights into the confusing areas of business. Learn about the current state of technology and technology of the future with Lee Award Lee, every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, on her show, The Executive Toolbox, on VoiceAmerica.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today. We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is starting a technology company now. Our guest for today's show is John Rotkin. John is a successful entrepreneur who started a technology company, FlySwat, Inc., in 1998. And during his MBA at University of Chicago, and sold it in 3 years to NBCI for $120 million. Subsequently, he was the Vice President of Product Development and Research at NBCI and was responsible for all aspects of product lifecycle. During his tenure at NBCI, he was accountable for 80% of company's annual revenue. John is a computer science graduate from MIT and is currently pursuing his dual degree, that is MBA and JD, from University of Chicago, and at the same time looking for his next entrepreneurial challenge. He recently led his team to the second place on New Venture Challenge entrepreneurship competition held at the University of Chicago. Before the break, we briefly discussed about the development platforms that are available for developing any technology product. And John and his team used Linux for a specific purpose. We'll move on to our next question. John, when technology companies started, there are literally no rules. Most of the times, the entrepreneurs just start programming. And as we all know, a successful technology product requires a very good design and architecture. What was your experience in this regard?
Well, we fell into that group where we just started programming. I didn't, but the engineering people we ended up recruiting did just jump in and start programming. And I think the way it worked for us, and it's probably not the way I would do it next time, is we wrote a software that worked and that allowed us to demonstrate the concept. which was incredibly valuable for us in our efforts to raise investment. However, the software didn't work widely. It was buggy. It wouldn't have scaled, things like that. So once we raised our investment, we went back. We redesigned components of the system. We updated a lot of architectural issues, and we made the product scale. And at that point, we developed very good software that ended up leading to dozens of patent applications and so forth. So it took us a while to get there. I don't think the instinct to just start programming is bad, because it does give you something to think about. It gives you something to demonstrate to other people. But certainly you can't release software that you just started, just sat down and started programming.
So did you, or you and your team did not actually do a lot of drawing and, going and scribbling on pieces of paper and trying to see this is how it should be and this is how, maybe you did that, but that was more seat-of-the-pants architecture versus trying to create a, advanced system design and architecture documents, etc.
Right. We did, in our early stages, we did the seat-of-the-pants architectural meetings where a few of us would talk about how we think the software should work, and we'd do it for 10 minutes, and then people would just go code. Later, we got a lot better. As the company grew, it's especially important when you have more people and when you're trying to release software to a lot of users, that we would have more formalized architectural discussions with different groups to determine not just how the architecture could work for the current version of the product, but for, two later versions of the product and things. So I would say we started out entirely informally, and by the time we had released our software and millions of people were using it, we had a very formalized, standardized architectural review process.
So you're not exactly advocating that, but you're saying that just somehow happens just because there are a number of people getting together and trying to figure out, and they want to see something tangible versus everything in thin air.
Yes. I think that you have to have good architectural practices before you release your software to a lot of people. I also think, especially if you're just a lone entrepreneur or two or three people, that formalizing a lot of the specifications early on may hinder some of the flexibility that you need to get the process done. So I do advocate moving from informal to formal probably a little more quickly than my company did it. But I think it's a good company life cycle to go through.
Well, that's wonderful. So the process of starting a technology company is known to everyone and is documented and published from almost every imaginable aspect. Given the current times, do these documented tips or tricks or processes are recipe for success, or is there some creative improvisation that could be done and which could be, or which is basically required to be dodged?
Well, I think the most important thing beyond these online documentation and other books about starting a company is finding someone who has done it. Being an entrepreneur is hard to say, but you're focused on the details. The details of what you do are largely what's important. So although you need to have a long-range company vision and motivate people towards that vision, day-to-day, there are a lot of detailed issues. Recruiting employees, negotiating compensation packages, dealing with leases, with contracts with other companies, with media relations, all sorts of those things. And a lot of those are not included in any of the manuals I've seen for starting a company. So you have to sort of know where you want to get to, which is the vision, but then also be pretty persistent and tenacious at moving through the details to get to where you want to go. And I'm not sure that you learn that from a book. I think you a lot of it is improvised and learned from, you know, a mentor who has faced similar issues.
Let me take a quick peek at the business planning side of your company. I'm sure it's a technology company, so everybody is busy coding. What was the emphasis that was put on the business planning in general?
Well, because we started in an entrepreneurship competition, we were required to have a formal business plan with a formal slide deck along with it. So there were two of us, I and another guy who took care of all of the financial details, who did all of the early business planning. We sort of wrote business cases for how the software would work, for why people would buy it, for how we would distribute it, all of that. We covered all of that while everyone else sat in the back and coded and made the software that actually worked. So we ended up with a very formal business plan and a slide deck of maybe 15 or 20 slides that clearly and quickly explained our business. And then I and the other guy, Ray, would go out and meet with investors and show them our slides and convince them to read our business plan. But most of our efforts, I would say 95% of the company time, was spent coding.
And actually, did you follow the business plan? Because it's not only about the coding, but also, of course, the other aspects about cash flow management and strategic planning and other channels of distribution creation and things like that.
I think we were a rare case where we followed our business plan almost exactly. Our predictions for how much we would charge advertisers for placement in our software, for how we would distribute the software, for a lot of those issues, the predictions in our business plan that was written 2 years before we ever launched software were actually very close to what ended up happening. I think a lot of that was luck. Some of it was hard work. And I think that generally you have to be flexible. Not just a business plan guy, but be comfortable very quickly.
All right. We will take another break, and we will be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Dare to be a leader is not just a show title, it's a way of life. With your host, Dr. Valenti, you will learn how to apply leadership skills to your everyday life. Dr. Valenti will discuss topics from overcoming fear to building confidence. That's Dare to be a Leader, Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Are you an employer that has questions on workplace law? Do you know what your rights are? If you would like to find the answers to these questions and more, tune in to Employer Law with your host, Craig Scott. Broadcasted live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Business America Radio. On the show, Craig will answer callers' questions pertaining to legal issues and discuss the municipal topics from hiring and firing safely to sexual harassment and employee privacy rights. Once again, that's Employer Law with your host, Craig Scott. Heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On Managing Technology the Right Way, we'll talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its associated risks. Heard every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Sun Jogal, the host of Managing Technology the Right Way, will interview business leaders and other experts that have shaped the way we use technology. If you want to keep up with the changing world of technology, listen to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is starting a technology company now. Our guest for today's show is John Rotkin. John is a successful entrepreneur who started a technology company, FlySwat, Inc., in 1998 during his MBA at University of Chicago and sold it in 3 years to NBCI for $120 million. Subsequently, he was the Vice President of Product Development and Research at NBCI and was responsible for all aspects of product lifecycle. During his tenure at NBCI, he was accountable for 80% of company's annual revenue. John is a computer science graduate from MIT and is currently pursuing his dual degree, MBA and JD, from University of Chicago, and at the same time looking for his next entrepreneurial challenge. He recently led his team to second place on New Venture Challenge Entrepreneurship Competition held at the University of Chicago. Before the break, we briefly discussed about the business planning side of a technology startup and how John and his team was able to somewhat accurately predict the way the numbers are going to look like and also the way they would negotiate rates, etc., with the potential customers and vendors of their products, and were able to stick to it. It's a rare situation, but hats off to you guys. Now let's move on to the next question. What are some of the crucial areas, John, in the venture which require a technology entrepreneur's serious attention, just because there is a tougher than ever uphill battle that they need to win?
I think nowadays the most important thing that entrepreneurs need to focus on is the sales cycle. Not just which companies will buy our product, not just how much will they buy it for or how many dollars they'll save because they use our software instead of something else, but very detailed, you know, specifically which employee in the organization will you call first, and then how long will it take that employee to meet with you, to evaluate your software, who else will that employee have to talk to, how will the company make its decision, what criteria are they going to use to make their decision. You know, some technology buy cycles take 12 months now or 18 months or something like that. So knowing that our technology can help companies reduce their costs or increase their revenues, and that, you know, we can show them a clear ROI, I think used to be good enough. But now I believe people really look for not just can you demonstrate a clear ROI to the company, but how will you demonstrate it to them? Specifically, who will you talk to? Who do you know who can get you to those employees to talk to? Very detailed sales cycle mechanics, I think, are far and away the most important thing to focus on right now.
So this therefore definitely becomes the front end, that is the sales side of the venture. How about the back end operations and like product development and HR and other back end operations, which basically are the backbone of any company?
Certainly. Your own infrastructure is obviously important, and for me, infrastructure means not just HR and technology, but sort of your entire company operations, all of your processes and procedures. And those are always important, because when you sell software, you need to make sure you have the company to support it. But I think in these times, the most important thing to focus on there is keeping your costs in line, not hiring people that you don't need, not spending money that you don't need to spend to build up your infrastructure. I think that investors especially are comfortable with a little bit slower growth, grow your company slowly as you make sales, instead of growing so that you can sell 10,000 pieces of software tomorrow when you don't have any sales yet. I feel like 5 years ago, investors were more concerned about you being ready to really take off on a grand scale, and now they seem to be more focused on you being able to survive in case you don't take off on a grand scale. So those imply different things about how you should set up your back-end company operations.
Now, for mature companies with mature products, they have already established the market and everything, and then they actually are going after the customer relationship management and those areas. Now, for technology companies who have just started selling their products, as I understand, it's also equally crucial that once they have sold the product, they are also able to support them, not only from technology standpoint, but if there are any grievances from customer standpoint, they go out of the way, because that brings in repeat business, and that is actually the key to a company's success.
Certainly. There, 5 years ago during the boom, you could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on software and then never hear from the company again. And that was okay at the time. But nowadays, when it's really a technology buyer's market, as the seller, you have to be ready to, really sell to have good customer service and good pricing and flexibility and all of that. And I think without that, these days, there are so many other people the buyer can go to that you'd really have a hard time making headway.
Yeah, that's of course the situation. Now, are there any measures in the area of product development, marketing, channel development, or other areas that I have not pointed out here that could provide a yardstick to these technology startups in terms of where they are and what needs more attention?
I think marketing these days is sort of goes along with sales, and that also is obviously part of channel development. So I would say that the major yardstick is sales, orders. So how your orders are tracking certainly says how well you have your channels developed, where your orders are coming from. As to product development, certainly if you're not getting orders, it's because you need to add or subtract something from your product. So I feel like they all fit together. And at the end of the day, what's important is, are people buying your software or not? And if not, then you need to change something.
Now, do you have any message for other technology entrepreneurs who plan to make it during these testing times?
Good luck. It's certainly a hard market these days, but it's not impossible. I have a variety of friends who have recently gotten companies funded, companies that, aren't selling software, are you know, are still just at the idea stage, even people in that stage I have seen get funded recently. The valuations aren't what they were. It might take longer to get funded. You might have to meet with more people. But I have seen it happen. So it's still possible. Just be ready for a long, persistent process.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, John, for sharing your success story and the expert advice for our budding technology entrepreneurs.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me.
I would like to thank all callers who asked some great questions and provided their comments. I urge all listeners to participate, as this is the key to the success of our show. It takes courage, patience, and persistence to start a technology company and turn it into a successful enterprise. There are two things that play an important part. First is the product service idea that actually solves a business problem and creates real value. Second is the careful planning and its careful execution. It involves developing right sales and distribution channels, providing excellent pre- and post-sales support, and watching the cash flow. And in the process, goal should be to streamline the internal technology management processes to make sure that the best product is made available to the target users. Tune in again on Friday, October 31st at 10 a.m. Central. The topic of our next show is Technology Innovations, Do's and Don'ts. It takes serious planning and immaculate execution to bring a new technology product to market. A lot of us try, but few succeed. The guest for our next show is Dr. Richard Bruno. Dr. Bruno is the ex-vice president of Philips Electronics NV and currently serves as the chairman of Beyondif Corporation. He is well known for his pioneering work on compact disks, multimedia, JPEG, MPEG, video conferencing, and security systems. Let's listen to Dr. Bruno to learn about what should and should not have been done to or to be done to ensure successful technology innovation and product development. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog All next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.